So you were located in Wyoming with a few other Missouri Department of Conservation staff members. Could you tell me a little bit about how you were offered this opportunity?
Sure. So to be able to go out and participate in our out-of-state fire operations, staff have to go through a training that goes through some different coursework to talk about wildfire suppression efforts, situational awareness, understanding fire behavior, and in the midst of these courses and a physical test, give you the qualifications to be able to make you applicable to be able to go out. So during this time, what we do is we put in our availability as an agency. We have this agreement with the Missouri-Iowa Interagency Dispatch, which is a coalition of several agreements with several organizations and agencies within the state to be able to provide resources when they are contacted to be able to provide these out-of-state fire resources. And so as such, as a member of the Department of Conservation, we basically put in our availability that says should a crew be requested in within this time frame, we put in availability, and whenever they are given the request for resources, crews are compiled and put together by what's called the mock teams or mock crews, and then after that they are dispatched to wherever it's requested, and most of them are out-of-state fire. And most of them within the Western United States, but not always necessarily. There are fires that are happening up in Canada and the Minnesota area as another example. So wherever they find us is the greatest need, whenever these requests put out, is where our crews go.
Were there different positions between yourself and the other team members, or did you all work together on one mission with similar roles?
So within the crew, there are different qualifications and titles, whether you're the crew boss, it's a crew of 20 people. Some of them might be qualified sawyers, which means people have gone through different chainsaw classes to be able to fall and cut down brush and secure fire lines. So we have some qualified sawyers that go on these teams, also with the firefighting crews. And then we also have, in this incident command structure, we also have what are called squad bosses. So think of them as sub-commanders, as our crew is broken up into separate units to be able to perform wildfire suppression activities. Those people have gone through some different training and qualifications to be able to lead those different sub-unit teams. So we're basically put together as a crew. Ours was a crew of 20, and we had representatives from the Department of Conservation, Fish and Wildlife Service, staff members from different entities in Iowa that also joined in, and most of the time there are also Forest Service employees involved and people for that work from fire departments that have also undergone these wild suppression types of trainings that also have signed up to go. And so it was a group of us with the task effort of whatever they needed us to do at that time, whether it's putting in a fire line, whether it's what we call suppression efforts and what we call mop-up duties after a fire comes through. We are charged with making sure that we secure the line to make sure that there are no reigniting embers, to make sure that we cut down additional brush. And what we call is creating that black line or the fuels that have been completely burned out and making sure that the fire stays out. Sometimes it's also wildfire suppression efforts, so sometimes it might be brush mitigation and other things that we've done to create these fire-wise communities to try to mitigate any future wildfires from happening.
Could you tell us a little bit about how wildfires end up happening or why they happen in certain locations during certain times of the year?
Sure. There's a lot of things that drive increased fire activity. Usually it's a drop in relative humidity. Is one thing. There are three elements when it comes to fire. It's fuel, moisture, and temperature that come into play whenever we're talking about things that actually, light fires off, whether it's intentionally or accidentally. So one thing out west, especially in latest years, has been there's been severe drought, so there's been lower humidity, there's been less water on the landscape, and then there's been the accumulation of fuels, what they call different fuels, whether that's your trees, your brush, your grasses, other things that could be very dry, and basically create a tinder box and create a situation where a fire can ignite. A lot of times out west, they actually can be caused by lightning. sometimes a storm will roll through, but it will not actually rain. And so you have lightning strikes that are actually hitting the ground and igniting some of these fires without any rain or any moisture to, you know, mitigate that. And so several of the fires there can be lightning caused. And sometimes they're caused by accident. Someone leaves an unattended campfire, for example, which is where we talk about campfire safety, and we're talking about our own human efforts, where we've accidentally, you know, left a burn barrel and the winds had picked up or it got really dry, and we weren't attending to them. And so sometimes that happens. Sometimes it happens intentionally as well, which is also an unfortunate thing. Fires have happened that way. So part of them are human-caused, and then part of them are natural events-caused. But in any case, they occur because they were not prepared for, as opposed to our prescribed fire, where we have management plans, we have resources, and we have crews in place to be able to put on these burns for a directed management purpose. But wildfires happen because they are those unprecedented events. And because they were not designed for that, then they end up becoming out of control, and that's when you go into a completely different tactic of trying to do suppression efforts instead of using them for a generated purpose.
And wildfires are natural to a certain extent, but when does it become so serious where emergency personnel are called in?
So as the severity of them increases, it starts just like any fire we would have around here, that sometimes if it's immediately addressed, if it's a smaller one, it might be managed by the local resources. So whether that's a local fire department, whether it's engaging some of the other agencies, the local agencies, to be able to contain it within reasonable limits that the state or the locale is able to manage and to do, then it's done that way first. But when fires become very large, when they become expansive, and when they go beyond whatever local resources are able to keep up with, then it kind of enters an incident command level where it goes up into a level of severity. And due to those classifications from an emergency response system, then you're looking at trying to make a bigger coalition to make decisions to make the shout out for larger resources, whether you're talking about equipment tankers, additional fire crews, whether you're having to actually set up some incident command structures to be able to make it operable to put that shout out for those extra resources. And that's where something where Missouri comes in, where we might not have the one that has the wildfire, but it gets to a point where it's so large that these are interagencies have come together and made a formal request to obtain those resources from other states. And that's where we come in. So every fire is completely different. Every setup is completely different, but it runs through these chains of commands of events. So it can be as methodical and as organized and knowing where the greatest priority is at that time.
And can you give us an idea of what the day entailed as an emergency responder?
Absolutely. And I'll say that for every crew there. And just to give you a scope, I'm one person out of thousands of firefighters that were out there. There are many people within our state that go out on these assignments, and sometimes people go out multiple times a year. Fire season typically runs from the end of June, July, to about October. So within that time, I just really do want to give a lot of credit to all the folks that have sacrificed time from their jobs, from their families, to be able to do their part in these efforts. And so I was saying that every situation is different depending on whatever the needs are for where our assignment is. So a lot of what we had done, one of the first fires we had gone on was actively burning, and we came in actually towards the later part of the evening, and part of it was securing a line. So that means wherever a fire was moving, we had some part of our crew that was actually putting in a fire line, trying to create that division from the burnt fuels, which is what we call the black, and the unburnt fuels, which would be where fire has not rolled through. So it strengthens that, so a fire will not continue to jump and continue to stay out of control. It'll try to contain it. And part of that is also taking a place that's already burned and just trying to strengthen that line and strengthen that barrier of buffer between burnt fuel and unburnt fuel. So a lot of that is what we did the majority of the time, and then monitoring it after a fire has gone through and is completed. And that's what we call the mop-up operations. So mop-up is when we'll resecure that line, we'll look for those hot spots of things that are still smoldering or things that could be embers or things that could still be burning, trying to dig them out of the ground, trying to cut them down, rake a bunch of that brush in, And trying to put that out to the best of our ability, and then we would continue to secure those lines around the perimeter of that fire to make sure that we are doing our part to make sure it stays contained within where it was, and so we can be able to close it out. Our crew was on three different fires, and they were smaller fires, and they were mostly in sage and this shrubby juniper habitat. But again, every fire is different, and everyone has a different set of challenges they have to deal with. We did have one instance where we were monitoring one fire and watched another wildfire spark from power lines in an oil field, and it emerged right in front of us, 2 miles away, and we were the fire crew that was the closest available, so we got in our trucks, and we moved into position as this new fire had developed, and we came in that evening and put in these lines and put out some of the shrubs and tried to do all of the activities that I'd also done in conjunction with some of the local agencies, and we also had a tanker that did these drops of water to put out the fire in places where having a crew was simply not feasible due to some of this deep topography. So basically a concerted effort between us as hand crews putting in our manual labor, and then in conjunction with the fire trucks that were there, and then the air tankers that were dropping water in from local sources, we were able to get this fire contained within a few days. And it's hard work. I mean, they're very long days. We'd start bright and early in the morning, and some days we'd be late. We'd be working until after dark, and we try to take many breaks and stay hydrated. As you can imagine, Wyoming was very hot. We were in 100-degree weather more than multiple days out there, so trying to make sure that we are also taking care of ourselves. And making sure that we can get the appropriate rest that we need throughout the day to make sure that we can be in our best optimal condition as well.
And is there anything that we as the Missouri public, or really anyone across the country, can do in terms of volunteering or helping out with the wildfires?
Well, I think some of the things go back to the campaign that, you know, comes back to, you know, Smokey Bear, like only you can prevent wildfires. And it's basically creating an awareness of what we can do on our part to mitigate our own personal activities, like paying attention to the weather patterns and when there's burn bans out, being respectful of them, not having any heavy dense cover or brush that could be a fire hazard close to your house. So trying to do our part to using what we call situational awareness. And that is being just being aware of those behaviors and those patterns. And whether you're doing it in your backyard, whether you're doing it when you're camping or hunting or fishing or out for the weekend, just thinking about sometimes how we light a fire, making sure we can kind of use some of those same philosophies of keeping the fuel away from the fire that we want versus the fire that we don't want. I think that's really the best way to say it. And it's not something that's always preventable. Like I said, sometimes it happens naturally and sometimes it happens accidentally, but just paying attention, making those contacts, and just when it becomes an issue, you know, becoming an informant and making those calls and making those reports so the trained personnel that have to come in and move in can move in as quickly as possible. The thing that's neat about it, it's its own way. I mean, it is hard work, but I think the respect we get out of it, making sure that our work feels like it's a worthwhile effort, feeling like we're making a valuable presence in these activities, receiving gratitude from people, and just it makes it a worthwhile experience to be able to go through. And you're right, you get to see some country you never get to see, you would normally never be able to participate in, get some really wild experiences like that. And that in itself is just a neat adventure. And so, yes, I did take video.